Kay Ulsey. I'm here wearing a few hats, but probably the one that I want to highlight is Board of Directors of Walnut Avenue Family and Women's Center.
I'm Raphael. I started a community organization. I'm here to learn more about the focus strategies, solutions, and how we can, I'm looking at the night towards trying to implement what we can in the city of Santa Cruz and beyond.
Hi, I'm Taj. I work at Janus in the recovery community, and I'm the other co-chair, also a student, their advocate.
I'm Brooke Newman. I'm the project manager for the Downtown Streets team. It's the volunteer work experience for folks experiencing homelessness in our community. I'm going to stop there.
All right. You've met Megan, and I'm Susie, and just pleased to have you here, so please get started.
Sure.
Introduce yourself and
sure. So, hi everyone, I'm Catherine Gale. I'm a consultant working with Focus Strategies. As you'll hear in a little bit more about the work that we do, we work in communities across California and all across the country. I've been doing this work for a couple of decades and had hoped we would have ended homelessness by now, but think that we still have a lot of good work we can do together. And it's really just, I feel very honored to be invited here to speak to all of you tonight, giving up your evening to work on this issue, so thank you.
And I'm Kate Bristol, also with Focus Strategies. I think I would just say the same things Catherine did. I'm working on this issue for a long time. Just in case you're interested, we both came down from the Bay. I live in Oakland, and Catherine lives in Berkeley, so we're not too far from you. I think I would just echo that we're really feel privileged to be able to come speak with you. It's exciting to know that this, there's this large number of people who want to work on this issue in the city. I think, as you'll hear as I start getting rolling with the presentation, I think the work we're doing, is encompassing the whole geography of your county and is largely kind of looking at a little bit of a longer time frame of solutions. And I know that you all have a lot of very immediate things facing you here in the city that you're trying to tackle. And I'm hoping what we can help do is sort of connect the two pieces of work and figure out how we can help support you and you can help support us in this as we go forward. So I do have a lot of slides. I will not try to downplay that. You did get ahead of time a copy of our report, which is what we're calling our baseline assessment report. And the slides just map to that report, so there's nothing in them really that isn't in there. Again, in the interest of time, I think I'm going to try and focus on the parts that seem like they would be the most relevant for the work that you're doing. And I may skip over some things or go through some of them a little bit more quickly. And we have cards. We can hand them out. You can definitely get in touch with us afterwards if you feel like we didn't touch on something you wanted to hear more about. Okay, you're going to timekeep for me. Let me know if I'm going too slow.
Okay.
Or if I need to, yeah. All right, so Focus Strategies, as we mentioned, we're a consulting firm. We're based here in California. We have staff up and down the West Coast, as far up as Seattle and as far south as San Diego. We have client communities all around the United States. And our focus is really on systems thinking, using data, and looking at how communities can really think about moving beyond kind of responses to the crisis of homelessness that are around managing the problem to ending it. And so we really feel like that housing leads the way to getting to that solution. And so we were invited by the county, actually, in collaboration with some of the cities, to come and do this scope of work, which began in March of this year, and will go forward into April of next year. So this piece that we're presenting tonight is the first step of that scope, and actually I have a graphic that's on the next slide. So we have been in the community for a few months. We've met with actually quite a lot of the folks in this room. We've interviewed folks on the phone. We've come to a variety of different community meetings. And so we've gathered a lot of information that we have rolled into this baseline assessment report, which is what we'll be presenting to you. And then that's just the first step of a multi-phased project that's also now including a piece that's already getting started in July, or got started in July, which is a whole quantitative and data analysis piece. Then we'll be working with you guys in the second part of this year and into next year on developing an overall system strategy for addressing homelessness in the community, broadly defined as the entire geography of the county. And really the goal is to get to a systematic coordinated response to homelessness, including a governance structure.
Can everyone hear?
Am I too quiet?
In the back.
I tend to be on the loud side, but so this is we call this the Candyland graphic. People know Candyland, the game. So we're on the orange square right now. We have quite a few blue squares still to go until we're done with the work. But we issued this baseline assessment report in August. You have a copy of it. And really, the purpose of this is to set the baseline for where to start doing the work as a broad community defined as broadly as possible. It draws from stakeholder feedback and documents that we've looked at. And the idea is to really kind of tee up the next phases, which are include data analysis, looking at your overall system and trying to develop a plan that fundamentally what we're trying to help the community get to is you have a lot of great programs. You have a lot of pieces. You have shelters. You have outreach. You have housing programs. You have a lot of really committed and dynamic and motivated folks in the community who want to help. And so you have pieces, and the thing to do to get that to be more effective and drive you further down the way towards having fewer people who are living outside instead of a growing number of people living outside is to pull it all together into a more coordinated response where everybody's rowing in the same direction. So that's what our work comes in and what we're going to try and help you with. So again, this is just kind of saying the same things over again. These were the information sources we used: phone interviews, in-person meetings. We looked at a lot of materials. We looked at a little bit of data, and it, you know, a lot of what we've observed comes from talking to you folks. So the first part of our report really is just kind of a quick summary of some basic data points about the problem that you all are grappling with. I don't know how much any of this is news to people, but you have a one-day point-in-time count that happens every 2 years, which shows you a kind of a rough approximation of the number of people in the community who are either not sheltered or living in shelters. So we have a little bit of data here. As I think you know, because I think a lot of the purpose of this group has really been to grapple with the issue of unsheltered homelessness, which is people living outside or in encampments or in vehicles. More than 3/4 of the people who were counted this year in the count were unsheltered, and a lot of them are here in the city. And actually the number we're quoting here is from the 2017 count, because we didn't have the breakdown for 2019. We did hear a lot in sort of engaging with people who have lived experience of homelessness, and also with the providers, that we heard people express that they feel like as this problem has gotten to be more visible over the recent term, that people report that there's a kind of a fatigue in the community about the issue, and that people who are experiencing not having a place to live feel less welcome. And feel like there's sort of more the response feels less compassionate. And then this graph just gives you a little bit of the data of what seems to be the most recent trend. So if you look at the orange bar on here, this is the numbers of people experiencing unsheltered homelessness over the last 3 counts, so 2015 through to 2019. So it went up quite a bit between 2015 and 2017, and then actually went down a little bit between 2017 and 2019. It doesn't necessarily, this won't necessarily track what people feel is the are the numbers, and you can certainly have a more visible population that is not actually bigger than it used to be. It could also be your count is low. We don't really have a way to assess that. Neighboring communities in the Bay Area and Northern California have experienced humongous increases in the numbers of people they're counting who are living outside, so it's kind of interesting that your count hasn't exploded. That doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't feel like it's exploded. And then these are just some data about certain subpopulations. There's been good work and progress made on decreasing chronic homelessness, which is the people who've been experiencing homelessness for the longest periods of time. Some decreases in homelessness among veterans, and then a big increase in TAY stands for transition age youth, so youth homelessness has been going up. Okay, so that's just sort of some context, which I think is probably not really news to most of the people here, but kind of gives you kind of the main kind of quantification of the problem that we were starting with. And then I want to spend a little more time talking about our framework for assessing. So we were asked to come in and look at how the community is responding, what are the kind of solutions you all have put in place, and what we think are strengths and challenges of what you're doing. So we have to have some benchmark against which to assess. And so our assessment framework is really about systems and kind of a systematic response. And so we talk a lot about something called a homeless crisis response system. Can have other names. But essentially the idea is that as a community, just as you have a mental health system and you have a health system and you have other kinds of systems, publicly funded systems, as people who are housed experience an episode of homelessness, there's a systematic response that is consistent across the community. And to have a really strong, effective response that's systematic, you need these three features. And these are the things we sort of looked for as we were looking at what you all are doing. Is it too backlit?
No, we just got people with really, it looks like...
Oh, you got the sun in your eyes.
It's okay, coming through the window.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay.
We'll be okay.
I think the sun is going to go down below.
We got it.
All right.
We
have
That's what one of the staff did.
So these are sort of three kind of framing ideas that we use as we look around at what's happening in the community. One is what are you doing at a kind of a high level to reduce the number of people who lose their housing and experience homelessness? So people who might be housed and then they go to being unsheltered, whether they're outside, in an encampment, in their car. So what are you doing to sort of prevent that from happening? So those are strategies to reduce inflow, and we can talk a little bit in some further slides about what those look like. Then you have kind of homeless system interventions, which are programs that you use when a person is experiencing homelessness and they need help. So those are all the different kinds of things I'm sure you're all familiar with, like shelters, outreach teams, housing programs. And so you really need to have a lot of those things. They need to be high performing. And they need, when we say high performing, we mean those are interventions that need to, as quickly as possible, help people secure housing. And then the third thing you need is you have to have some housing for people to get to. And so that can include a range of different solutions, including kind of different kinds of housing programs and subsidies that you offer people, and also just housing that exists in the community that you're helping people get to. And so those are kind of the programmatic pieces, and then the other pieces we were assessing against are more structural. So do you have a leadership and governance structure that supports making decisions at a system level? So in other words, do you have a way that all of the different stakeholders in the community can come together and make decisions, again, so that everyone's rowing in the same direction and you are working towards a single set of strategies and policies? You need to look at data and be able to evaluate how you're doing to be able to figure out if you're making progress, and then you have to have staff to support that. And then this is a picture I wanted to spend a few minutes on, and I know some of you who've been to our presentations before have seen this, and you're probably tired of it, but I think we like to show this picture because it illustrates the point that in a system that addresses homelessness, or a system to end homelessness, the objective is at the end of a person's experience of working with that system, they have a place to live that is some form of housing. So the way this is set up, the red is a graphical representation of the group of people who might be already unsheltered or at risk of becoming unsheltered. And then you have a series of different interventions that you do to try to get them to housing, which is the green. And there are a variety of different kinds of housing programs and housing strategies you can use, which include things like rapid rehousing, which are shorter-term interventions, and then you have longer-term things like permanent supportive housing. And then the yellow box at the bottom are your shelter and short-term interventions. And I think those are really important parts of the system, and it's important to give people a place they can go to get off the street and get to a place that's safe, where they can then begin working on a strategy for getting housed. But it's important not to think of the yellow as the overall objective of what your system is. And so I think particularly in communities where you're experiencing a large number of people who are outside, you have encampment issues, you have a lot of community impacts from people being outside, there's understandably usually a lot of focus on that yellow, like where are we going to get people, where can people go? It's important to have a place for people to go. And it's also important for them to have a place, a way that you get them from the yellow to the green. And that is typically the piece that is the hardest to execute, and in particular usually involves, this is where sort of all that coordination and system thinking comes in, because a lot of the strategies to get people from shelter into housing require that you mobilize all your resources, your city's resources, your county's resources, your private resources, and so really kind of getting everyone together around a strategy for ensuring that people aren't just going from red to yellow, and then from the yellow, they go back to being homeless again. So I think a lot of our work is really getting communities to think about all the resources they have at their disposal and what is the best way to marshal those resources to make sure you have a system that gets people into the and they don't just go from red to yellow and back and forth. So that is the homeless crisis response system. So we have that as our ideal, and then we looked at what is going on here in Santa Cruz County and to see, you know, what you have in place that's already getting you towards having this kind of a system, and where do you need to scale up or focus or target. And we did find you actually have a lot of things to build on that are working and that are parts of this. So the rest of the slides really are just kind of our summary of what we found, our assessment of the efforts that you've made, where we think there are strengths, where we think there are challenges, and then at the end we have kind of an overview of what we think are the main takeaways. And then there's also some recommendations at the end, which I'll explain when I get there. How am I doing time-wise?
Should probably go a little more quickly.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, we're going to go fast. Okay, so leadership and governance, I think the main point have here is that you guys have an existing governance structure, which is the Homeless Action Partnership, which is something to build on but doesn't actually yet hold all of the different responsibilities and doesn't yet fully fulfill the need for an overarching system governance. So I'm just going to go really fast through this part. So there had been some previous work on redesigning the overall system governance, and that didn't quite get finished. And so one of the things we're recommending when I get to the recommendations you'll see is to kind of revisit that work and see if there can't be some kind of a resolution to that that puts in place a structure that allows all the different stakeholders and all the different resources to be marshaled together in a more coordinated way. Strategies to reduce inflow. So these are some of the things that you would typically want to have to make sure that you're not continuously having more people who are housed start start to come experience homelessness and you have a growing number of people living outside. So a lot of what you need here on reducing inflow isn't yet in place. So this was like an area where we're really at recommending some focused attention. Diversion is a strategy of problem solving with people just at the point at which they're leaving whatever the housing situation they have is and helping to get them to stay where they are or go to a different housing situation. It's similar to prevention, which is trying to prevent homelessness among people who have their own rental unit. And then there's a whole, typically in most communities, a lot of people come into homelessness because they're exiting an institutional setting, whether it's criminal justice system, the health system, the mental health system, the foster care system. And so having kind of overarching strategies that reduce those numbers are really important. Another area we looked at is your emergency response. So these are all the ways that you interact with people kind of in the what we would consider kind of the front door, the front end of the system. So this includes your mobile outreach work, kind of walking around outside and engaging with people who are outdoors, who are living outdoors, drop-in services, emergency shelter, safe parking programs, and then kind of just the general response to encampments. So you have kind of all of these pieces in place in some ways. Some of them are pretty robust. So the main things that we found that we felt like were important things to think about in terms of the emergency response in the community, and again, this is not limited to the city of Santa Cruz, this is looking all across the county, is there's a lot of outreach programs, but they're not all coordinated to make sure that there isn't a lot of duplication, so to make sure they're really, those resources are being used to the maximum extent and that they're oriented to helping people figure out what is a solution to their current homeless situation. Similarly, in terms of your shelter system, there is some focus on once people get to shelter, it's really important to help them figure out a way to get out to housing. And some of that is happening, but we felt like it really could be scaled up quite a bit more. There's not a lot of resources to get people from shelter to housing. And then you have these new NAV centers that are going to be coming online, but it feels like there's a lot of conversation about the siting and not necessarily so much yet about what is the service model going to look like and how are people going to exit the NAV center to housing, which is the idea of a NAV center. We know that this is a community that's had kind of a pretty long history of large encampments that you have to deal with. And so this is a really not a simple, there's no kind of simple solution to this. Our assessment was that there's a lot of energy that goes into helping people get from one encampment to another. And of course you have to deal with public safety and public health issues around encampments. And also it feels like there needs to be, that needs to get connected to a bigger picture strategy about again, how are you going to overall reduce unsheltered homelessness? And the way to get that is to connect all these emergency response efforts to housing pathways. And some of those pathways are these kinds of homeless-targeted housing programs that you have already. So the main kinds of interventions that most communities have, you have transitional housing, which is tending to be... which is an intervention that is shrinking because data shows us that it doesn't tend to be quite as effective as rapid rehousing, which has been increasing. And then you have a pretty decent supply of permanent supportive housing. All of these we felt, based on our assessment of them, you have these things in place. They are not yet really scaled to where they need to be. And this is, again, this is sort of critical if you want to get from this sort of system where people kind of go from being unsheltered to sheltered to being unsheltered to sheltered. You have to kind of get them to the housing, the targeted housing solutions. Faster. Okay, sorry. I'm gonna keep going.
I didn't say that. I said a little.
Okay. All right, skip over. Coordinated entry, I'm going to just skip. You have coordinated entry. It's actually working really well. We had some thoughts about how to refine it. you do have an affordable housing problem here, as does everywhere in California. Just read the newspaper. One of the things I think for the longer range plan that we're working on with all of the stakeholders is going to be to think about what are some strategies to both increase the rate at which you can get people into the housing that you have, which is going to be critical, and then also to think about how you're going to build up the housing inventory. Data is an issue. One of the things we'll be working on in our next phase of this work is really digging into what is the quality of the data that you have about the people who are experiencing homelessness, and making some recommendations about how to improve that. And then how to, again, connected to the governance piece, you need to have a function in the community where people are looking at data, figuring out what it's telling you about what's working, and how to then use that to drive towards better results. Some other miscellaneous findings, and then here's our overall summary. So, and you'll find this again in the report. So you have some key elements in place that can be built on, including a solid coordinated entry system, outreach shelters, some housing first oriented permanent supportive housing. Some things we identified as big gaps are there's not really a diversion function that helps divert some of the folks who can more easily be housed quickly. Your shelter system could be more housing focused, and there could be more strategies built in to get people from shelter to housing, and you need more rapid rehousing and permanent supportive housing. Everything needs to be tied to a system approach. You need to continue to make progress towards a better governance structure that is pulling all the pieces together and data analysis capacity to inform the efforts that you're making. So then the very last thing, I think there's just like three more slides. We were asked, so our work isn't going to end till middle of next year with an updated strategic plan and an action plan. We were asked if we could make some interim recommendations, even though our work is just getting started, just so that some implementation work could get going right away while we're doing the rest of the work. So we have a few interim recommendations. If you come tomorrow to the bigger community meeting, we're going to talk about these some more and do an exercise where people can help us prioritize these and see what people are actually interested in implementing. So these are a few just limited things that we think would be impactful that you could get going with pretty quickly. But this is not not everything we're recommending, just a few things. One is implementing system-wide diversion, which I talked about a little bit. There's a little bit happening, but to really fast-track that and scale it up and resource it, and then train all the providers in the community how to do it. We think you'll have some impact there on sort of reducing the rate at which the population of people who are outside is growing. We feel like you could get started right away with your shelter system and figuring out how to resource the existing shelters to get more people out into housing, even while you're sorting out the navigation center questions. We felt like you could start right away looking at the different outreach efforts in the community and just inventory them and work on sort of coordinating and standardizing what they do, so that they can be a little bit more efficient and that you can use outreach again as part of a strategy to get people from being unsheltered to the next step towards getting housed. And then the last thing is the governance recommendation, which is to reconvene and finish the governance work that started a few years back. Okay, so then this is my last slide. So tomorrow is this community meeting that I mentioned. We'll do this presentation, but we'll take a little bit more time. And then we're going to do some further discussion about these short-term recommendations and action steps that we think you all could try and tackle if you decide to. After that meeting, there'll be a short-term action plan that's released, and work can start on any of those recommendations the community decides you want to start on. And then the other thing is that the rest of the work we're doing here around system development is happening. By the time we get to November, which is really soon now, we'll have the data results to share with you. So the next round of analysis and information will be coming soon. So you can kind of stay tuned for that. And that's
Thank you very, very much. We really appreciate how quickly, but giving us substantively good ideas on what is in your report. Let me now ask if members of the CATCH have questions of Kate and or Catherine. Rob.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could maybe expand on the challenges and strengths of the encampment response.
Yes, what shall we say? We could expand a lot.
I think what, and if we pull the slide back up, it would have, I think, some of these words on it. The thing I think that we wanted to call out is that the amount of energy and literally sort of the psychic space that this is taking up, as important as it is taking away or is potentially becoming the focus when the things that we're talking about we think really need to be the focus. And so while we know that there has to be a response that responds to public health concerns and safety, public safety concerns, and that is should be part of both the short-term other strategies that you're exploring, like improvements and expansion of sheltering capacity, coordination around outreach, that if you're if the response to encampments doesn't recognize that moving people from one place to another doesn't actually solve the problem, it creates a level of frustration. It's both a potential resource drain, although some of those resources are necessary, but it also creates then the perception that there isn't any other solution. Because the perception that when we get rid of an encampment or move it, that's supposed to end the problem, and then it doesn't, then leaves people who are experiencing homelessness with nowhere to live, which is the end game that we want to get to, and leaves the rest of the community with the perception that that there is no solution, because that was perceived to be the solution when it won't be a solution on its own. I don't know if that answers what you're asking, but so I think that's what we found, is that we heard a lot of time, a lot of energy, potentially some finger pointing, and also some strategies that are more focused on the immediate and less on the long term. So we heard that certain encampments had been sort of sanctioned but then unsanctioned, or you know, sanctioned in one place but then moved to another place. Again, understandably, there has to be some kind of response, but the response seems to be a little bit about what can we do now in seeing it as a crisis, which it is, both for housed and unhoused people, without necessarily having planned for what the long-term strategy is, which is, I think, what we're talking about. And I think that's...
John.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give a data answer to that. So one of the things that we have helped a lot of places do, and we are also doing here, is I think it's very hard to decide what is the balance that you need of housing and shelter if you don't look at your number, if you don't use the data that you have. So that's one of the things we're actually in the middle of doing right now, is looking at your shelter system and your housing interventions that you have. How many people are going into them in an annual basis? How many of them leave and get housed? How many don't? How many of the ones who get housed actually come back and are homeless again? And sort of what is that flow? And then we can start helping you set some goals about, okay, so maybe It looks like our rate of exit from sheltered permanent housing is right now 15%. If we resource those shelters so that 30% of the people can exit to housing, we've actually doubled our shelter capacity without adding any shelter beds, because shelters are actually getting people out quicker and to housing, and they're not coming back. So we try to have the conversation about what do you need and how many beds of each thing do you need by looking at your existing inventory, what's happening with it right now, and what realistically could you change to get more out of what you've already got. And so in terms of other communities, I would say that I'm trying to think of where they've actually been able to reduce family shelter capacity, because they just did a much better job. I'm trying to think of where we could call out.
Well, I know New London did that,
yes.
And I was just talking to another community that was, again, Connecticut.
Right.
I would just add, I think it's, so I think to Kate's point, but just putting it bluntly, like if your numbers show right now that there's 2,100 people in the most recent count, we know that that does not mean that you need 2,100 shelter beds, because shelter beds should be occupied for a fairly short period of time, and you don't want to build capacity up to a level of the number of people you have today and then put all your resources into the shelter basket, particularly for the reasons that Kate said. On the other hand, in California communities, typically, we are typically fairly under-resourced on the shelter side, but also on the housing side. So the analysis would look at not just kind of can we get the number of exits that we have up, but like what are you buying right now? What are you buying in terms of outcomes? What more can you buy with those same resources if you juggle things around a little? And then do you still have a gap? And in California communities, we typically find gaps in both housing and shelter. And then you have choices to make, and we try to model a little bit what those choices might look like. So if you add a lot of shelter capacity, you might solve some of the situation on the street today. But if it doesn't have the connection to housing, then, right, that piece. And then some of it is also a response to then where do you have opportunity? So you want to have a plan, you want to have a sense of what you're getting now, what you're buying now, what kind of outcomes you're getting now, and could they be better with the same resources? Then where would you invest more? And then where can that resource actually come from, and what opportunities do you have? That's all a long way of saying we don't have the answer yet for you. It's something that we'll be looking at. But in California communities, unlike places like Connecticut, where they're starting to actually decrease their shelter capacity now because they've done diversion and they've got exits, right? They've focused on the front and the back, and they can reduce the middle. Our middle is underdeveloped, as is our front and back. So we'll have to figure out what places we need to scale up.
Katie?
I think related to that middle, but one of the pieces of the baseline assessment that I was really fascinated by, and thinking about how this relates to what we're trying to do here, was about the geographic disparities, essentially, between both need and resources,
mm-hmm.
developed and underdeveloped in North and South County. And because this body specifically is charged by the city,
mm-hmm.
not the county, as I read that, I was starting to think about what recommendations you might have about what profitably we, within this capacity, may want to focus on, and whether that's trusting that South County can sort of work on that not quite tapped out potential for housing kind
mm-hmm.
of piece, where we're pretty geographically tapped out on that, but maybe the middle is more acutely, or the yellow, or whatever we're
mm-hmm.
calling it, is more
right.
acutely needed here. I mean, where would that play in sort of to the county level, and then constricting it to city level picture that you're seeing?
Yeah.
Sorry, it's a big question.
No, but I think the purpose of, I mean, I think the big picture, I think that whatever pieces you do from the city perspective, and you do have your you sit in a particular place and you have particular things confronting you, that what we're recommending is that whatever those are, that you work with your partners, that this group needs to think about how the pieces we're going to work on are going to connect to what our partners at the county, the other cities, the philanthropic community, whatever, are also doing, and to have that all be aligned. So I think, without knowing exactly what the main recommendations out of this body are going to be, it's hard to say, but I think the message we would want to say is I know you have representation here of people who have that countywide perspective as well, but just to sort of be thinking about how can this objective we're trying to accomplish, how can we leverage and support and coordinate so that what we're doing is, as a result of it, is as maximally effective as possible. I don't know if that, you think that that gets...
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I would say is just to also think about challenging the concept that you're completely tapped out on housing. Like, you're the more expensive part of the county and more concentrated, and you have other parts of the county that are relatively more affordable still, but coming up. And this is a California and West Coast situation that every community that we're working in has, and particularly anywhere where you have sort of a central city or a city that has maybe a larger overall proportion of the homeless population and simultaneously the tighter housing market. So that's part of why the countywide approach has to be there. Like, we have to recognize not everybody's going to get housed in exactly the place that they're experiencing homelessness, whether they're from that community or whether they're not. I was wondering if that would come up. Like, we also hear a lot about people are not from here, and our typical experience is that the majority are, and that there's folks who move from community to community, and actually things like diversion think about that. Like, are there folks who could and should be offered the opportunity to go back to a more affordable place? But ultimately, we're going to have to make some space throughout the county. And so I think Santa Cruz as a city is probably going to have to look at its housing policies for density, for development, for whatever, as are your neighbors within this county, as is the whole state, right? But that doesn't mean that we have to create one unit per every person. Like, there are a variety of other strategies. There are a lot of people who are probably sharing right now to avoid homelessness. That's a reality. And it's going to be easier, I think, and I think this is what you were getting at, for you all to adopt a balanced response if the rest of your community is with you on it and is also adopting a balanced response. And it's much harder when communities are making independent decisions based on assumptions, and that kind of keeps the finger pointing going, I think, is that it's your people, or, you know, we provide all the services, but you aren't giving any housing, or we have all the housing and you're sending your people to us, is a really common county, cross-county conversation that we think both a combination of looking at your data, recognizing that we jointly own this problem and we don't solve it that way, but we solve it more effectively working together, is more effective. And not easy for me to say and hard to do. I'm not trying.
Josh, thank you so much. So I would like you to speak to diversion, please. What does that mean?
So diversion is it's unfortunately a term that has kind of arisen organically in the field, which is starting to now be repurposed to be something called rapid resolution or problem solving, housing problem solving. But it arose really, the strategy kind of was invented by some shelter providers in other parts of the country, really. And it's really about, so when you talk about preventing homelessness, the question is, how do you know if someone's really about to experience an episode of homelessness, right? So I could be renting an apartment and I'm behind on my rent and I feel like I might become homeless and I go to get some assistance. But if I don't get that assistance, I might still figure out a place that I could go. So, like, really figuring out, like, where's the best place to deploy resources to keep people from becoming homeless is hard. So diversion, the idea of it was, well, if people are showing up at the front door of a shelter and saying, I need a shelter bed, that is probably someone who is about to experience homelessness. So shelter diversion was this strategy of sitting down with people as they show up at a shelter and saying, not saying, okay, are you eligible for a shelter, but actually saying to people, why are you here? Shelter is, for a variety of reasons, not the best place for you to be. We really want to make sure we've explored every option for you to be housed. Where are you coming from? I'm staying with my friend, but my friend's throwing me out. Okay, what can we do to sort of get you to just stay with your friend, because it's actually probably a better place for you than being in our shelter. And so that's the idea of diversion, is that you try and catch people at this moment when they might either go live outside or they might go into shelter, and see if there's some kind of, whether it's even an informal kind of housing situation that you can help them identify and sustain that could be permanent or could just be temporary until they're able to get to a different housing situation. And so, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to add on to that.
Yeah.
So, and so that's kind of the originating place, and I think also to say that in some places there just isn't a shelter bed, right? So there isn't one. Therefore, what else could we do, either on a temporary or a longer-term basis? But what communities are finding is that you don't actually have to limit that to the person at the very moment that they're showing up, because actually more and more of this problem-solving strategy, particularly in places like California where we have not enough shelter and a lot of folks outside, can actually be deployed with people who are currently living outside, which is to say there isn't right now, there isn't shelter and there isn't a housing resource and we can't promise you anything is coming soon. Either what have you done in the past or where would you go if you knew for sure that, that nothing was ever coming here? Like, what we find is that people often have an impression that if I get into shelter, then X, Y, or Z is going to happen. And in some communities, that's true. If I get into shelter and I stay there long enough, then there's a Section 8 subsidy coming for me at the end. And so that is a me maximizing my chances of getting housed, is to remain where I am and wait for a series of openings to happen. And when you move to a system that really prioritizes, recognizes the inventory is what it is, we don't have enough, not everybody's going to get housed, honestly has conversations with people about the likelihood that a housing resource is or isn't coming, and then offers a continuously available support for, as Kate said, sort of problem solving. It can be mediation. It can be a little bit of money that can help secure a current situation. Like, I could really stay on if I could help pay for groceries where I am. Or I could stay on truly if my mom or my friend or whatever understood that shelter isn't actually going to get me. Like, sometimes we hear people say, I came to shelter because so-and-so who I was living with or I knew said this would be a better option than where I am. And when people have an opportunity to explore in a supported way, in a self-driven way, whether there are other solutions, it's not going to work for everybody.
No.
And it shouldn't be required, but a lot of people will take that opportunity up.
I have a follow-up question. Is this then only at sort of a service end, or where would diversion take place?
Right. So there's a range of different ways you can do it. So I was starting with, like, the most limited would be just at shelter. A broader practice would be at any provider agency that offers any kind of a service to people who experience homelessness, and you can even broaden out further to
schools.
What sometimes we call upstream systems, so other systems that might, like, so for example, there's some pilots being done now with criminal justice, so jails and prisons, maybe jails just, and hospitals, where the discharge workers, instead of their strategy from when they're discharging someone and the person says, I have nowhere to go, they send them to shelter. You train them how to do diversion and how to talk to people. Okay, where was the last time you had a safe place to live? What if we helped you do that? What if we had $100 we can give? And so you can deploy it pretty broadly. And it really is just about what resources do you have to do it? What is your system configured like, and where are the most likely places that could be a good practice? But it's really trying to get to a practice rather than create a new program. It's not like a new program. It's a skill set that you train staff to do as part of like one of the first things they do with people.
And if coming out of tomorrow's community meeting, this is one of the areas that people take up, we expect there seems to be interest on the part of the Smart Path group to sort of take this up as an issue, then asking the question, where would it happen here, will be a specific question about. So literally where, what are the right places within the County of Santa Cruz to have this be open, available, who should be trained, do we start narrow and then broaden it? We're working in a community that's got a kind of a two-phase plan, which is we're going to build it into the homeless crisis response system first, but then we want to go to upstream providers as a second step and have them all get trained. And
I would just say one other thing, which is there's I think, appropriately some healthy skepticism about using this strategy, particularly when you think about people who've been outside the longest, so your chronically homeless population, people maybe who've been living in encampments for a really long time. The likelihood that they're just going to suddenly figure out a solution that's going to lead them to housing is probably not as high. But you have to think about all the people who are newly entering homelessness every day, right? So your count doesn't show that the population is growing, but it probably is growing. The number of people outside is growing. A lot of those people are new to homelessness. And so if you have this robust diversion practice that will help you reduce that inflow, and so that you can then also look at the deeper resources you have, the Section 8s and the Permanent Supportive Housing. Those are the kinds of things that end homelessness for people who've been outside a really long time. So you can better target those things if you have this diversion piece for some of those folks that are maybe a little bit easier to find a solution for.
Thank you. Can I ask you?
Actually, sorry, but I know that there was at least one other person who wanted to ask a question, and I'd like to take it. I wanted to see if we have a moment to ask a question back to the group, which is just like, did this resonate with you? Was there something missing? What did we, like, that would be helpful to hear.
My question already got answered, so, yeah.
So I know we only have a couple of minutes left, but Don came up and said thank you, and we appreciated hearing that it sounded like we'd hit on a number of the right things and that our perspective was at least resonated with one person in the room, but just, like, when you read this, if you had a chance to read it, did you feel like, yeah, this sounds kind of right, but where's X thing? Or were you like, this is all new to me? Whatever your reaction was, I think we'd like to hear it.
Okay, if you would like to respond on that? Anybody want to respond on that? Ralph?
I think, it resonates particularly with people who are really sort of county-focused. I think this body, as Don was, I guess we're all sort of wondering, like, specific things that can, that are city policy specific that fit into the larger systematic picture. At least in this interim report, I don't see a lot of things that we could I see how we can align things, but I don't see like outside of the box thinking that's really taking a strategy in a new direction. It's just expanding on what we have, and maybe that's fine. But just selfishly, I guess thinking about what recommendations the city could have, I think would help this body have a clearer focus on how our decision making could align with the larger systematic picture.
Thanks for that.
Katie?
I mean, I actually find this really useful as a kind of assessment, as a potential set of criteria for assessment about specifically that question of alignment. Like, it's not totally on target to this body, but alignment with, or alignment into the gaps that this assessment has revealed. Data, so I think it's
thanks.
Serge, for me, like it was. the direct services, how people, I see a lot of people like the yellow, red, back and forth mm-hmm. things. In Santa Cruz, people have spent time in all the shelters, like mm-hmm. months or years, bouncing around. And there are, I run into a lot of people who don't want to play in the system at all. They're not signed up for anything, and they don't want to. So the engagement of those people to want to be part of the system is how that shelter is designed and how those things are, how they're treated, like the encampment idea. Like, if that was managed or something, you now have them, you're starting to interact, and like that's the first way of getting them into the system. So it's, I think immediate services does have effect on outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Others?
Well, I'll speak for myself. I
Josh?
Found this quite fascinating, actually, and a little bit more geared toward what my own machinations have been. How do we address the entire system? Because this is a California-wide issue. It's a United States issue, mm-hmm. not a global issue. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where my mind has been going to a lot of this, that we need to deal with this, the immediate needs, as well as we can't dismiss the housing question from this, and housing issue, affordable housing. So I'm really happy to hear you say that, and that's going to be a part of your work, is to let our city council and our governance know that that's important. Yeah, a lot of food for thought. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don.
Yeah, just one thing that I think is really valuable for us, I think it was somewhat alluded to, but I want to say it a little more strongly, is that even if we in this group do something, you know, that's a little more narrowly focused, it gives us a chance to do it really consciously of how it will fit into the system change that I think is really going to come. I'm presuming something that is not definite yet, but I believe the county-wide effort will move in the direction you're
mm-hmm.
suggesting, and I think it will be really beneficial for us to pay a lot of attention to that, even if the details of what we do might dig a little deeper into one part and not
mm-hmm.
be system-wide thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be going the other direction,
yeah.
and this allows us to know how not to do that.
Other comments? We have 5 or 6 or 7 minutes maybe. Let me invite anyone who's with us this evening that would like to ask a question. This will not be our substitution for oral communication. Let me just ask you, the gentle lady in the back.
My question is, using all the right words, systems and strategies and focusing, is there a part of your work that helps to target how to build community will? A lot of the solutions are known, and then things get moved around,
mm-hmm.
nobody wants them. So do you focus and strategize that?
This is one of the, I guess, blessings and the curse of being a consultant. So actually, we can't consult you into having community will, fortunately. One of the pieces of the work, we did kind of gloss quickly over some of this governance work, but sort of us trying to provide our technical expertise to the leadership of the different jurisdictions and other community leaders around how to organize yourselves across the whole community in a way that you can, as we've been talking about, sort of have an overarching strategy and making sure that all the resources you're investing are being used to their highest and best use. So we can give you a lot of technical support around what that structure would look like and who needs to come to the table. How to generate political will, I think, is, I don't know what we say about that. I guess...
Related to that, I think what we say about that is it is a necessary but not sufficient condition to get to political will, to have a strategy that is defensible and the data that supports it. And you have a much better chance if you can show that you've made a sound investment and you know what the result of it is. Like, you have a much better chance of getting people to buy the idea that you should maybe create more housing instead of moving an encampment, or you should expand what shelters do to make them more housing focused and not just have them be warehouses for people or whatever, if you can show that that makes an impact. So that part of moving political will through evidence is something that we can and do contribute to. The political will battles around convincing, whether it's the whole community, whether it's people who are elected, whether it's people in key positions, and that changes, right? We also, we work in communities, and then 2 years later, there's a leadership change or election, and will goes up or down as a result of those things. Kind of our strategy is to provide, ammunition's a bad word, fertilizer for the garden, tools that folks like yourselves can use, but it is not a guarantee, and it's hard work, right? And those of us who do this work, and many of you too, right, know that there's both the general kind of political will, which actually we think this can help to at least make the soil better, and then there's each individual plant and the actual fight over everything that goes in and where it goes in. And that takes, I think, the hard work of people showing up and speaking in favor of it and mobilizing themselves and getting behind the strategy. But as Kate says, that's not something we can, you know, kind of do for communities. But we can certainly raise what we know about what works in mobilizing. And we're not messaging consultants either, I would say. You know, there are people who have a whole kind of campaign strategy around stuff like that.
Let me ask if there's anyone else who's... Sir, good evening.
Yeah, you looked at all at the mix of transitional housing between, healthy people versus people who have chronic mental health, addiction, criminality issues, and how the temporary beds might be a range of hospital beds, short-term, long-term, treatment facilities, jail cells, you know, it's a mixture, right? Mm-hmm. So looking at what is that right mixture in terms of funding? Because we're chronically short in all those areas.
Right, so I will say that the narrowly speaking, the data that we're looking at will encompass only the subset of things that are funded through your homeless system, because that's what we have data about. So our data analysis isn't going to actually look at the number of treatment beds you have and the number of jail cells you have. But I would also say that we're helping you think about this system strategy and the idea that fundamentally the goal is that at some point along the pathway, everyone secures some kind of a housing solution. There's no one size fits all, and people need different things along that pathway. And so that is part of the, you know, whether it's a treatment bed or, different options. So I think in principle, yes, but then in terms of the specifics of the data that we're going to be looking at, we're going to be looking at shelter, transitional housing, rapid rehousing, permanent supportive housing, as the pieces that we analyze.
And we would also say that treatment, it's getting a little outside scope, treatment for substance abuse and drug treatment needs to be available to people when they want and need it, and can be outpatient and can be in beds. And there is a lot of evidence that housed people who then engage in treatment, even in outpatient treatment, have as good or better outcomes as people who have a residential bed. And there are some choice things there, both for the person and for the community. But that if you think of residential treatment as being a solution to homelessness, it won't be, because people finish treatment and still need somewhere to go. And so we'd like to be able to offer the somewhere to go and the options for treatment as meeting the needs of people who have both of those needs, as opposed to seeing the bed as solving the problem, which I think is what sometimes people think. If we could just get people into treatment, that they could also sleep there, that sort of solves two problems, but it doesn't necessarily solve
those. And on the other hand, if the addiction or the mental health issue isn't dealt with, even if you put them in housing, then they're going to be back on the
Well, and that's why you have housing that is very much designed for different groups of people and with different kinds of services, that you don't do housing only if somebody has a need that's greater than that in order to retain that housing. Yeah. I know we're probably at time, but
No, we're doing just fine.
Okay.
We have one more piece of business. We are on item Roman numeral number 3. This is oral communications. This is an opportunity for anyone who's with us this evening to address the CATCH on a matter under their jurisdiction but not on tonight's agenda. Does anyone wish to make such comment? Good evening.
Hi. So just, I want to touch real briefly on the presentation that you gave. Not all people that are homeless are drug addicted or mentally ill or fall into, or some of us actually went into society pretty well and need help beyond just treatment facilities or residential facilities and things of that nature. And I would hope that those stats, those people like myself, don't fall through this crack of focus strategies and where to put all the right buttons. So, I have an issue with an item that was on the agenda about how HSC received this chunk of change to extend public showers and bathrooms. And they actually reduced them when they closed the hygiene bay for, what's the sign say, mold, something or another. And so I'm just kind of curious how we make HSC respond to that. Like, you were just given this chunk of change. It's right here in black and white. So why did you just cut the hours to 10 to 2 and close the hygiene bay? Just things that make me get question marks like, that doesn't add up to me.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to address the body on this? Seeing and hearing none, let me extend the thanks to Kate and Catherine. It is very, very kind of you to make special time to make this presentation to these folks who are all volunteering their time to help us make a stronger, healthier community. Thank you very much for being here this evening. And those of us who may be attending tomorrow, we look forward to seeing you again. Thank you to staff. Ladies and gentlemen, unless there's further business to come before the body, a motion to adjourn will be in order. Serge makes such a motion. Don seconds it. Non-debatable. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries this order. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Really, really quick question.